Seven Reasons Why I'm an Anti-Industrialist, December the 7th, 2023. Having written a couple of recent articles advancing an anti-industrialist position, I've been reminded that this viewpoint is very much a minority one, even amongst those with whom I'm generally in agreement. I know that to many it seems like an utterly outlandish proposition. What? No electricity? We'd all just die! If my mission in life was to gain popularity, followers and subscriptions, I would no doubt be well advised to keep quiet about this subject, write about something else and try to come across as a bit more mainstream. But that is not at all the aim of my writing, through which, for many years now, I've been trying to evolve and communicate a holistic political philosophy in which opposition to industrialism plays a central part. So I'm going to have another shot at explaining why I think the way I do on this rather important issue. I'm presenting my reasons in a very personal way, because I want to make it clear that I'm not trying to impose them on anyone else. I don't expect people to necessarily agree with me, or to miraculously change their mind on a subject of such vast significance on account of a few words. However, what I would like to do is to help open up discussion on what has long been a taboo subject, and has lately been pushed still further into inaccessibility by the cynical abuse of the language of anti-industrialism by industrialists peddling a fake green agenda. I hope that readers will at least agree that it is generally unwise to keep rushing headlong in the same direction without ever taking the time to make sure that it is the right one. So, I'm anti-industrialist because industrial life just doesn't feel right. In my teenage years, I started to notice that something was deeply wrong about the world in which I was living. Initially, I internalised this feeling, concluding that it was me who was in some way weird or inadequate. But I eventually managed to convert it into a defiance, a conviction that it was because this world was one without values that my own thirst for values set me apart from it. But what was it that was fundamentally wrong with the contemporary world? And what were the values I needed to embrace in authentic opposition to it? I thrashed around desperately for years, trying and failing to answer these questions, and I don't think it is coincidental that the picture only began to become clearer when I finally escaped the grey suburban world of Greater London and started the next phase of my life in Sussex. This was, needless to say, still part of the broader industrial world, but suddenly I had daily access to nature, which had previously been an occasional weekend or holiday treat. I could walk out of the newspaper office at lunchtime, down a beautiful old street, past the parish church, over a wooden bridge, and what joy, into the lush green woods and fields of the southern English countryside. Our minds and spirits are moulded by the physical reality around us. What kind of thoughts and attitudes are going to be created by the constant absorption of harsh, artificial, grey, linear forms, of brutal, loud, mechanical noise, of exhaust fumes and polluted air, urban air? And what will be the reaction of a human soul to regular exposure to the harmonious, diverse, colourful beauty of nature, to the gentle music of rustling leaves, flowing water and birdsong, to the scent of earth and flower, of the fresh air blown in from the distant ocean? More and more, I could feel a qualitative difference between my experience of being alive when surrounded by nature and when in a town or city. A sense of belonging to nature won my heart, and thus threats of urban encroachment into that nature were now effectively threats to my own extended body. Because industrialism is murder. There are, of course, entities, interests and motivations behind industrialism. Industrialism is not the murderer, but it is the murder. Because they tell me I can't be. You're not really allowed to be an anti-industrialist. It's not supposed to be a position that can be legitimately held in the 21st century. People will sneer at you, make up insults, tell you to shut up. For people like me, that's all the encouragement we need to double down on our belief. Because technology is not neutral. It's not the tool, they say, but the way it's used and the person who uses it that is the problem. But tools are made to serve a specific purpose. A machine gun is made to kill people. It can't be used to make cheese or darn socks. Factories were invented to increase productivity and drive down labour costs, to make more money from the human resources available to the owners. Industrial technique was made to exploit and control people and can't be used to empower and liberate them. Because industrialism is not an advance in human evolution. The myth says that humanity has been enjoying steady progress for many thousands of years, its capacity for innovation allowing it to invent various means with which to make life richer, safer, and more enjoyable. Trying to deny this tendency would therefore be to block human genius, to prevent us from filling our evolutionary potential, from marching on towards our triumphant destiny. And yet, the reverse is true. Industrialism does not channel or encourage human genius. It stifles and crushes it. People are reduced to the limited roles they play in its machineries, deprived of autonomy, the possibility to follow their own consciences, to shape their own lives, to participate in any meaningful way in society. Community as a living organism depends on the sensitivity, intuition, creativity, and ethical antennae of the individuals that make up its flesh. Industrial society is a dead thing, a zombie being. Human intelligence, spirit, and awareness are paralysed, and the population decays into numbed, dead-eyed, dull-witted subservience. Because industrialism is the physical manifestation of usury. When money is loaned into circulation as interest-bearing debt, a spiral of necessary growth is conjured into existence. When governments are persuaded to borrow money for badly needed industrial infrastructure or modernisation, for great leaps forward and five-year plans, the only way they're ever going to keep paying the interest on the debt is if there is further economic growth financed by further loans from the same sources. These financiers also happen to own the materials required for all this industrial development, for which they are paid with the money they have lent at interest to the government in question. Industrialism is the physical manifestation of usury, the way in which the system robs as well as kills. Because industrialism is so obviously central to the New World Order. Klaus Schwab of the WEF wrote two books about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The underlying structure of the globalist plans for the years ahead is provided by the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Development is the same thing as industrialism. Political movements controlled by the system invariably promote industrialism. The system's buzzwords like innovation and inclusivity refer to the expansion of the industrialist matrix. Without industrialism and the surveillance and control that it provides, there could be no new world order. Opposing industrialism is, today, the same thing as opposing the new world order.